they try to fake it. But one morning the clock will chime and no more birds come flying by. Temperatures keep rising higher, 16 bullets come flying by. And I throw your hands up high, cause you never know how long you're gonna live till you die. I throw your hands up high, cause you never know how long you're gonna live till you die. And they hit you with a missile, hit you with a bomb, hit you with the law and try to take your home. Break into your house in the middle of the night, track you on a cell phone by satellite. Stopped anytime you're in your car, search your body, search your home, and listening in on your phone calls. Still no politician got enough balls. Lining the people up against the wall, when the truth comes out, all hell will call. And someday Guantanamo will fall. Until that day, we all will ride on. I throw your hands up high, cause you never know how long you're gonna live till you die.
Welcome to Fight Back on WCRS 98.3, broadcasting from Grandview, 102.1, Easton, Westerville area. Today we have a special show, a recorded event from the African American and African Studies Community Extension Center, Columbus, Ohio, downtown, Mount Vernon Avenue, 905 Mount Vernon Avenue, September 20th, Jesse Muhammad. So without further ado, Jesse Muhammad.
Good evening, good afternoon. You said Houston, Texas, what it do? Don't be alarmed, that's just me. How you doing? That was translated in Houston language. Again, as you stated, my name is Jesse Muhammad. You can call me Brother Jesse. Here from Houston, Texas, the great state of Texas, which is the number one jailer, the number one killer in this country, which you all should be very familiar with our former governor and present governor. So I'm proud of Houston, Texas, but that which Houston, Texas has been doing to the people is definitely not something I'm pleased with. So that's what is one of my motivating forces, that which I write and that which I do. I'm honored to stand before you as one of five staff writers for the Bomber Call newspaper. This paper here, which I'm pretty sure you have seen in Columbus, Ohio, every here and there, right? Y'all seen this paper?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the Bomber Call newspaper is actually the only remaining national black-owned newspaper that's left in the country. Either the other ones that went out of business, they're no longer distributed, they either went local or they went straight online. So we're the only national one that's actually distributed, and we also have a UK and international edition as well. So I'm honored to be representing this Bomber Call newspaper, which is published by the Honorable Louis Farrakhan and the Nation of Islam. Again, first let me thank all working organizers for hosting this event, those who run this beautiful facility. I've been walking around, getting caught up in the pictures and looking at the uprising. Those photos in the back, and I took pictures of those, and just have been really absorbing. This is my first time in the state of Ohio, so you know it's my first time in the football capital of America, Ohio State. And I'm really learning a whole lot, and as we speak, being that I'm a student of life, I love being a sponge and absorbing from you all, so I would hope that after you hear the little that we have to say tonight, that you would definitely feed us. Well, why did Jordan ask me to come on this tour? Well, he couldn't find nobody else, that's number one. But number two, what linked us is actually we met up during the struggle and the mobilization for the Gina 6. How many of us, by a show of hands, is actually familiar with the Gina 6? Just about everybody. But what I'm going to give to you, just as I gave to those earlier, the very intimate and beautiful setting that we heard earlier today, I want to give you some behind the scenes from the eyes and the pen of a journalist, as well as an organizer, some things that you probably did not see on CNN, that the local station in Columbus may not have the insight to, and you might not have heard on your radio dial. This is how I got involved, and this is actually how I met Jordan Lottery. 2007, summertime, I'm sitting at home, and I get a text message from a guy, from a friend of mine, and he actually said, Jesse, you heard about these young six black boys in Jean, Louisiana. They got in a school fight. They got charged with second degree attempted murder. And they have about 140,000 bail. So I texted back first thing. I said, what is Gina, Louisiana? He texted back, I don't know. You're not helping my story. So I started Googling. I looked up, and I was only two people at that time that was actually talking about the Gina 6, and it was Amy Goodman from Democracy Now!, and the other person was Jordan Flowers. I didn't know who he was then, but I read the story, and it was two things that struck my psyche as I read through these accounts. One, I heard something about some nooses. Second, I heard something about some black male. Then the extra bonus third one is, second, the good word for a school fight? Now, you know, I'm a journalist, traveling, we speaking, I got a blog, win awards. But come on now, I got into a couple of fights myself in this back of the day. Oh, I ain't the only one. Okay, I guess y'all be so good. But at the end of the day, you win, you lose some, but the worst thing could happen is the police pick you up and take you home to your mom or your grandmother, and they whoop the crap out of you. That was the worst. I said, well, this sounds like a story I need to investigate. Now, being that I'm the type of journalist, I don't like to do the Google search copy and paste journalism that many people try to do today. I like to go on the ground and be where the action is. So my friends and I and our radical people from KPFT, Pacifica Radio 94.1, and New Black Panther Party, the Nation of Islam, community activists, we got our money together and we rode to Gina, Louisiana. Now, for those who have never been to Gina or have never heard of Gina like myself, small town of 4,000, 5,000 people. As soon as you make a right at the Chevron, you lose all cell phone signal. There's no Wi-Fi for your Mac. Your iPhone will not work out there. And the lady on the GPS system, she gets confused. So we got lost, and so we called one of the parents and said, hey, can you meet us at the Chevron and lead us back in? He let us. So I sat at the table. All of the parents of these six boys sat down and they told me their story. Now, this is an account that they gave me directly. September 2006, some black students go to the administrator and say, hey, we want to sit under what was called the white tree. White tree, nice and big and shady. The administrator say, fine. Well, they come back to the next day, three nooses hanging from the tree. Now, naturally, that's going to disturb the black students. So they started protesting. Well, the district attorney that was locally there in Gina, he did not like that. So he called an assembly. Now, we're all mixed up in here, but in Gina High School, he chose that day, whites on this side, blacks on this side. And he takes his pen and points over there to the black students. And he said, you don't stop all of this fun. And take your lives away with the stroke of my pen. So things kind of died down a little bit. Then comes December 2006. Black students decide to go to a party that's being hosted by some white students, and he gets into a fight, gets jumped. Then the next day, a white guy pulls a shotgun on three black students. They take the gun from him in defense. But then how did they get charged with the national weapon? Then after that, strangely, a part of the school gets set on fire, and then a couple of days later, this fight breaks out where six boys reportedly jumped this white male, second-degree murder. They almost killed him, but the same night he was at the farm. Hmm. Second-degree attempted murder. Well, these boys get locked up. Now, many of you, now we just came from a town that I organized today and never heard of, Bluffton, Ohio. Any of y'all ever heard of Bluffton? Some people. But just when you Google, just put in the corn capital of America, and Bluffton will show up in your Google search engine. But in all seriousness, people own land out there. But these families of Gina, Louisiana, they own land. Do you know that that bill was so high that they had to mortgage off land to get their children out? And then what happens is, only five of them get their children out. One, Michael Bell's family couldn't afford, so Michael was still in jail. So then we went over to the school. By this time, I'm like, man, this is serious. I'm paying. We're sitting at the house, and, you know, Michael Bell's grandmother, she was just sitting in the chair rocking and just depressed. Because Michael Bell, up to that point, just a couple of days later, they was chanting his name up and down the stadium because he was a football star. Now he becomes public enemy number one in a matter of 48 hours. And they sat down, and Michael's father pulled out his big box. You know what he pulled out? Scholarship offers and letters and recruitment letters from schools, including Ohio State, for Michael Bell. Letters. But he's sitting in jail, and he's attempted murder. So we go by the school, and I'm looking. I wanted to see this white tree for myself. I had to get the photo. Naturally, it's a nice big tree, and the parents are like, yeah, this is where the white students convene. And then over here, they showed me where the black students convene, and it's like broken down benches right in the sun. I'm like, wow. So as we just looking around, I'm taking pictures. Why does pickup truck with a Confederate flag decide to just roll by and like, hey, what y'all doing over there? Get away from here. We don't need y'all bringing it out here. I'm like, just investigate. As I told the other people earlier, you know, I'm the type of journalist, when you tell me not to write something, man, my instinct tells me I should what? Should write it, right? So with the momentum that Jordan Flowder had already set off, that Amy Goodman had already started, we put it on the cover of the Final Call newspaper in July 2007, and went out even further nationally, went out internationally, put it on the website, boom, Gina Sis got more exposure. People start talking about it more. Then the parents, the family, I admire them so much. They didn't wait for no big time leader, no national leader. They didn't wait for no radio personality or celebrity to organize them. They organized themselves. They had already started the NAACP. They had already got with the ACLU. They had already got that radical Jordan Flowder on board. They had already got the Friends of Justice in Louisiana. They had already got the momentum. We was there to support them. So they said they wanted to hold a rally in July 2007. We said, we'll come back. True story. We get the same caravan of radical people from Houston. We like to roll deep. Now, one guy from Pacific Radio, I had just met him before, nice guy, had heard his voice on the radio. He had one of the flyest old school Mercedes Benz, real nice, taken care of. But as we going, he started to fall back, and guy picked up the phone and called me and said, hey, Jeff, we got to catch up with you and Gene. I'm like, what's going on? I got to stop and refuel. You need to stop the gas engine? No. I need to stop and go refuel on cooking grease. I'm like, cooking grease? I said, well, you know, I'm into saving the planet, so I like to run myself on cooking oil. Oh, y'all ain't laughing. Maybe y'all run y'all probably on cooking oil. I'm afraid of me. Y'all looking like, hey, hold on, I do that stuff. Just a light moment. He eventually got there like 2 hours later, but I mean, he punched that 60 with cooking oil. I'm like, man, I was amazed. We got back to Jimmy, get ready for the rally, got lost again, had to get escorted in, but we get to the rally. Now, we're in front of the courthouse. Michael Bell on the other side. This serious business. It's hot as all get out there. This is white guy in the megaphone. Now, you know, most of the time, when rallies like that, you're going to hear a black person going off, but this is a white guy. And I come around the corner, we're going to shut Jimmy down. Free Michael Bell. All this type of stuff. And I look up, it was Jordan. Jordan going off. I knew we were cool then. That's my man. I didn't even know who he was. So, it's 300 people in front of the courthouse. Did you know that was the largest rally in Gina history at that time? We all won't get 300 right here, right? 300. Y'all get that at the concession stand at a football game on a bad day, right? 300 people made a statement that Gina, Louisiana is so small. No shot at anybody who may live in a hometown of this size. But they got a newspaper place. They got a post office, a convenience store, the jail, some houses, and a lot of porta pots. So by the time we was marching, you know the chant, no justice, no peace. But we said no justice, no, and we had already marched the whole time. It was over with. Y'all say, well, that's marching again. Nah, man, it's kind of hot out here. Hold on now. But the statement was made. Now, I know they might have reported it here in Columbus. You probably heard on the news that Michael Baseman, Reverend Al Sharpton, Jesse Jackson, that they were the ones that had called for the September 20, 2007 rally, which today actually represents the 30-year anniversary. You know who called for that rally? Families called for the rally. You know who called for that rally? Simple people like me and Jordan. You know who had decided who was going to affect them? The grassroots people. There was no big celebrity around them. There was nobody even giving care. How did they take claims and credit for something that they didn't even want to even have to do?
Okay. Well, we go back to Houston. Family said they want to have this September 20th rally because Michael Bell's next court date was there. Well, I went back. Now I'm supposed to be just a writer, but in Houston, man, I get organized. I love being organized. I love getting involved. So I went back and started hosting national conference calls. You know, that free conference call stuff in Andy. So we started using it. HBCU, we served as Black College and University president, fraternity, sorority, FGA president. I started with the black schools, got them going. Next thing you know, somewhere it got leaked. And all of these different colleges, white, black, didn't matter, they started getting on the call. The conference call got so packed one time, I'm the moderator, I called in 2-3 minutes late and couldn't get in. They just texted me, first up, you ready to start the conference call? I can't get in, it's full. Now, you know how to do this business when you fill up freeconferencecall.com. All I have to say is, next thing you know, this movement was being taken over by college students. They were the ones organizing. So as we rolled in and mobilizing, the students were deciding, I'm going where it is, you go where it is, we're going to have our banners, free the unity, we wearing this color. Next thing you know, Miami got busted, Ohio got busted, California got busted, New York got busted, Texas, Louisiana, all over the country. People getting fired up for a cause for 6 boys that we had never met before in our life. I wrote the story. Jordan wrote the story. I hadn't even shook these boys' hand yet. But I didn't care. It was injustice. So as we get this momentum going, man, you would think with a big story like this, man, where's the big corporate media in this? It wasn't important on it. So Jordan continued to write. I continued to write. Jordan Hill still is the website. They set up a defense fund. All is done by students and grassroots people. Momentum going. So let's get ready to close. We get close to the day. I'm sitting at home, nice Saturday morning. We got us up from the rally. Eat my cereal, watching cartoons. I mean, y'all don't do that out here in Columbus, I know. I turned on CNN, Anderson Cooper 360. He's a white guy, clean cut. I've seen him before. Had on a black suit and a nice tie and everything. It was Jordan being interviewed on Anderson Cooper. I'm texting him while he in New York. How you get on Anderson Cooper? He sent me back, I don't know. You know, they're talking about the genetics and going off. I said, yeah, this is crazy. Next thing you know, locally, I guess, after we had enough rallies at Texas Southern University, Fox News finally called me a couple of days before we leaving. Can you come on? Sure. Now, you know, news media don't like for you to take your own stuff on that advertise. Well, I'm sitting on Fox on the interview like this. Yes, ma'am. I'm asking a question with the final call news service, like on my check, like it's just tattooed. And the lady was like, did they let you bring it in? I said, nah, I tell you, I put it in my backpack. Bad pocket. She was like, black woman was like, well, keep it then. Yes, just keep it. So I had an interesting article like this. That's what you call product placement. So after that, corporate media start getting a little involved in it. The momentum is going. Next thing you know, I get worried that one of the national leaders, Reverend Sharp, they had read about it in the final call, and somebody called him to his show and asked him, did you know about the Venus 6? He's like, yeah, I read that in the final call. And I guess they saw the momentum. So these national leaders there and these radio personalities like Michael Pace said, hey, this is a good idea. We might as well. And we need to latch on to this. But the work has already had been done. Mm-hmm. By who?
Young people. Grassroots.
So, the day of, 3 years ago today. Now, naturally, we got a lot of students from UT, U of A, just all races coming to TSU. I put out the word to college students, you know, we can be late sometimes. If you end up by midnight, we leaving you. And that's your assumption that they was going to be late. That'd be the last people I got to deal with. We can roll. Hey, get the gym.
Did you know, like I said, 11 o'clock, and there was 200 to 300 of them lined up ready?
I mean, the girls who had just got their hair did and all that, and the bowlers and all that, the boys half sleep with headphones on, they sagging, they got their pillows, free the gym and stick, they had sleep, but they lined up and ready and focused. So rapper Bun B, anybody know Bun B in there? He said, oh, yeah. Man, I got to tell him. We got a streak going. They know them bluffs in Ohio, too.
Two of them. But that was two black dudes. I guess they don't count for
it. All that to say, Bron B, he's been traveling all over the world.
Man, look at this. I ain't seen them. He said, most of them probably just came out the club. Man, look, why ain't they all focused?
Say, what's going on? Look at them, they're so hype.
white, black, that shit didn't matter.
Did we suffer? So now, of course, nobody, we had the money to pay for the bus out of pocket. So naturally, y'all gonna have this problem in Columbus. So politicians, we tend to vote them in and out office all these years, and they tend to not do nothing for the community. Well, this time with the inner city in Houston, we decided we're not gonna let now one of those politicians slide. We had behind the closed door meeting with every city council member in Houston, and we said, you buying us a bus. And they actually did. But it just got a check for you. $1,500 we had 9 buses. So we get ready to leave. I get a report that 50 students that showed up and did not pay no money and took off a bus that they going to Jenga. So we had to go over there. I had to ask them nicely, can you get off the bus? This bus is paid for. People already have RSVP, they paid their money. So all these colleges paid late. So I went to Jenga with $5,000 or $4,000 rather, almost $4,000 in a backpack going to Jenga because everybody paid late. These students did not want to get off the bus. They wanted to come so bad. But one of the guys tried to jump fly with me.
I ain't getting off this bus. We going to Jenga.
Young brother, if you don't get off this bus, I got my radical friends from the Mars, the New Black Panther Party, the Pacifica Radio, take your two people. They can get off of that too. If you don't get off the bus, we'll have to carry you off the bus. All right, young brother, we're going to get off the bus. So now we got 9 field buses. 50 students sitting on the grass, pounding, wanting to go. How many of you out here would have left them? All these sympathetic people on this tour. Now, one person has said they would leave. I'm going to get one before we end this tour. I didn't want to leave them either. Some spiritual person don't believe in coincidence. Do you know, out of the blue, a bus shows up? Bah, bah. It's one of the local pastors, D.C. Cofield, black pastor. President Jackson, we were just coming by to see if anybody needed a ride. What the? An empty 55-passenger bus shows up. So the student said, you sent him a text message. You must send him an email, huh? You just, man, just get on the bus. I ain't telling him nothing. So we rolled out of Houston with 10 buses. Now, I did not get a memo from Jordan or even members of the Nation of Islam who were already in Jena, but naturally they couldn't signal nothing because you ain't had no signal out there. But the rattle was set for 10. They stopped letting buses go in at 8:30. We got there at 9:05. We parked our buses nearly 10 miles away from Jena. But don't feel sorry for us. Miami had buses 20 of them behind us. New York was behind us. Orlando had 15 behind us. Miles and miles. So what do you think we did? We got off the bus. I had to take off some slides, kick my hat on for the camera shots. I'm just kidding. Put on my New Balances in a suit tie, and we walked to Jenga. Everybody started walking. And what would make white students, black students, Hispanics, old, young, elder, what would make all of us walk in and heat, it was a cloud in the sky, walk for some boys that we didn't even know? Who made us do that? I got there, man, it was something that really tripped me out. Why were there three riders going on at one time when we got there? Now, I tell you that these different leaders that flew in and started making it seem like they called you. One had a rally over where they had cut down the white trees. See, Jordan had cranked it up too hard. They had to cut down the white trees. They just couldn't leave it up no more because Jordan was going to chop it down himself. Then we had at the school, at the park. Then you had the rally going on at the courthouse. Then you got Michael Bates and show they doing an electric slide. Why are we doing an electric slide at DNC rally? Somebody doing the blood. So I said, you know what, then? That's a lesson. But the point is that I know they told you out here that it was probably about 5,000 people or so that was on that bus. I mean, out there in the rally, yeah, sure. Those are the same people that miscalculated the Million Man March. They seem to not get their figures right, you know, when they report when we gather. It was 10,000 people by the toilets. It was 50,000 people out there easy. So a big statement was made. But you know what they did? As you said in language, that how they clapped back at us, how they got back at us? Out of all those hundreds, maybe even thousands of buses, do you know what they did to us? They let one bus come back into Jena every 45 minutes to pick us up. So me and these students and everybody else, we was in the baking sun laying on poster boards that were signs in the riders for 3 hours waiting for one bus to come back in to pick us up. Now, when they make a statement, why would they take their time, these law enforcement that had knocked out all communication? I don't care if you had Sprint, iPhone, iPad, you couldn't call nobody in Gina. They had cut all communication off. I had students lost in Gina. But they said, we're going to get y'all back.
I'm in the sun. I felt like one of them cows in the middle of the forum, like, man, it's hot. But I said, you know what? They mad at us. And you know what? I'm going to write a story about this rally, too. And that white lady that was over there talking about y'all in, why y'all doing all this, calling us the N-word, she said, we ain't have no trouble out of our black people until y'all showed up. Our black people. Now, I didn't go to English class all the time in high school, but I know that our mean possessive, huh? Your black people. Oh, really? Maybe we should write some more about this. So, when I get back... When I get back, history is the rest of history. And when we go back to Houston, I immediately, my first idea in mind was I wanted to get some good sleep. I was tired. But do you know students from San Houston, U of H, North Carolina A&T, UT, all these students that we had made contact with, they were texting me, emailing us saying, what's next? What's next? My response to them was, sleep is next. Can we just savor the moment? You applied history. Ain't that good enough? It wasn't good enough for them. So I ended up opening up my big mouth in a speaking engagement, and I was talking about the GMC's mobilization. I told some students, you know, with all of the studying that you're doing on the organizing level, I think somebody should take the model of how we organize for the GMC. Put it in a thesis form or however you want to do in review form and document it for further struggles. And some students actually took me up on that. And this is what they came up with, and this is what I was told to you. Now, I have only been giving this to people on this tour that have heard of. This has not been given out publicly because they're still working to get it Harvard reviewed. They want to get it published in books. So they allowed me to share it. This didn't come from me. This came from a group of students from around the country. This is what they call the five keys of organizing. They said, number one, you gotta have people. I said, man, y'all so brilliant. Y'all can't work at all by yourself. They said, no. What you have to do is have a certain type of like-minded people. Coalition, network building. Those people that are for a common cause. You ever been to a meeting where you seem to have all these groups of people that don't seem to agree with nothing? Can't seem to move forward. Pessimistic, always cautious. But they say you got to have a certain mind of people. Then the second thing they said is you got to have purpose. When we went to Gina, we had a purpose in mind. We wanted Michael Bell free. We wanted these charges dropped. We wanted these families left alone. And we wanted to make a statement. We had a purpose in mind. Oh, yeah. How many times have you ever... And all these goals, if you look back at your life and look at all the goals that you have not met, what happened down the road? Well, your why is because your why wasn't big enough. Why is what drives us to execute. So if you don't have purpose, sometimes we organize on a grassroots level. We forget why we're doing stuff. You can't just do it just for the sake of saying you do it just to look good. Man, organizing ain't about resume building, man. And that's what we have felt that. So you gotta have purpose. The third thing is you gotta have propaganda. Now you know what we use during the mobilization of the six? MySpace. Y'all remember that? Do like MySpace. We put out an executive order. It wasn't from the White House. Everybody change your profile picture to the Gina 6 fly. That was on MySpace. Then we use eBlast. You gotta have propaganda. Why? To transfer the information is so important. In all of the studies of military and warfare, when the opposition wants to attack their opponent, what's the first thing they want to take out? The communication line. Because why? If you can't transfer data and information to the soldier, then they therefore do not know how to maneuver. Therefore, they can capture you because people are misinformed. If you want to move the masses towards something, then you've got to be able to channel information to them. And communication means feedback. So if you're not getting any feedback, you're not communicating. So you got to have propaganda. The fourth one is you got to have performance. What good is it for us to talk all day if you don't have nobody to execute it? How many times we go to meetings,
you feel good, you clap, you applaud, you're like, man, that was a great strategy. It means you eat the good cookies and all of the carrots and everything. And then when you walk away and somebody asks you, man, what are you going to do? You know what? They didn't give me your assignment. We walk away with no follow-up. Nobody has no tasks. Who go organize? Who go make the fly? Who go do the meat? Who go order the designing water? Who go do this? Who go do that? You got to have executors. And as I said earlier, there are some people, they need to start giving out degrees at Ohio State for those who love to major in just talking all the time. There are people who are epically skilled in just talking. Okay, no offense to anybody. The fifth one from the students is you got to have procedures for follow-up. Meaning that, where can we go, but you have been successfully organized in something that has been documented for us to go back and utilize it as a model. Meaning you have been sitting here right in Columbus, you've been working and grinding for years in these communities. Where can we go when you have documented your successes? There's somebody coming behind you, a young brother right there. Yeah, he's doing spoken word, but how do you know he won't be an organizer here in Columbus? Where can he go to learn from you? If you've got far days, God forbid, but if you drop tomorrow, then where can we go and read your successes at? Where can he go? And well, no, it's a new generation. They got new things. No, it's certain things that are standard that do not change. They just do it in a creative way. Okay. So that's a five piece of organization. From the students, not from me.